Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. I am live to you from California. Welcome to Counting the Days, Recovery Through the Romance Side of the Brain. My show, I hope, will encourage you to live your intended self in harmony with your traumatic brain injury or caregiving responsibilities, to live with less resistance with your moving into an allowing state of being. I'm Tyler Stanley, your host. I'm an author, scriptwriter, non-practicing lawyer, and TBI resource specialist, and, of course, a survivor. My website for additional information on me is tylerstanley.net. Before our guest, Megan Timothy, comes on, I wanted to offer a comment for the day: meditate. Meditation has been something that I haven't done until recently, so there's been a lot of years gone by that I haven't practiced meditation. I don't think I ever fully stood still long enough to do it or to even fully understand it, excuse me, or how it would be valuable to my life. And then one day, I just figured it out. I was sitting in my car at the duck pond watching the ducks, and I was thinking, wow, this is meditation. This is what I'm doing. I'm in the present. I'm noticing everything vibrant around me in colors, in the water, the geese, actually the ducks, and children playing and voices and trees, and I realized, my God, I'm meditating. And so now from that point, that was several months ago, and from that point, I meditate every day. Sometimes it's only 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, it's a practice, and it's something that you build up to, like any other sort of fitness. This is very much brain fitness to me, in the fact that I am noticing things around me, and I am sensing. I'm using all my senses. I'm smelling, looking at the colors, and even if I'm indoors, if I'm in my office, I'll take that few minutes just to breathe slowly, be in the present. And being in the present means that you're not in the past and you're not moving in the future. And so maybe it's time off from worrying. And so for me, the meditation is just that. I feel like I'm having some time off. And that's powerful. That's powerful in the fact that you can really be exercising your brain and at the same time be very comfortable in your emotional state, your physical manifestation, and just where you are. And what I found about the meditation and learning this for myself is that, again, I'm not worrying. I'm not worrying about past relationships and how all that happened or didn't happen. I'm not worried about the recession. I'm not worried about, you know, what I'm going to do next and what I'm going to do in the future any more than staying in the past. And the past is important, don't get me wrong, and the future is important and looking at those places, but you have to take a break and reduce stress. And also meditation reduces stress on your body. So take that time and build that time just between you and yourself. And if you're in a hospital, look at the cup sitting next to you on the desk, or flowers, or, you know, the cup with a design around the rim, or the container of water, or out the window, or the sun coming in, or it raining, wherever you are, and look and just study those things. And that takes us into the present, is to be in where we are, to be where we are. And so I'm practicing the meditation, and it seems to be working for me very well in the fact that, you know, I feel like I've, you know, made some decisions in the past that you know, I want to kind of work over and go over and go, gee, if I had done this, if I had done that, that wouldn't have happened, and blah, 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 and just can think it to death. And there's no reason to do that. The past is the past. It's gone. And you live for the future, and you live for now, and you manifest your desires and your dreams and your goals. That's where you're at. That's where you need to be at. That's where I'm happiest. And I do. I go back to the past, as I said, you know, for a reason. I want to work through and process a failed relationship or one that didn't happen or not having one or whatever. I want to process those things so I get healthy around it. So meditation to me isn't that you are ignoring the past and denying the past or shutting down. Many people just shut down. Something's painful. And they just shut down. And I don't know. You know, sometimes I admire people like that. I can't do it. I'm far too intuitive. I'm far too sensitive. And I'm far too creative. And I don't shut down. And so, you know, those people that do, I have a tendency to think that they relive their errors and their mistakes and poor decisions again and again and take it into the afterlife. I think that the reason it's not healthy to shut down is also it's huge stress on your body. So you don't want to get into a place where you're so part of right now that you move into a very shut down space. And that's some people's answer to life. And just, but again, I think that if you spend too much time in a shut down space, then you're not looking at yourself. And life requires that we look at ourselves. I mean, don't you feel that? It's not that easy. You know, life is not that easy just to walk away from it all the time and deny it. And so the meditation is a real special place. It's a real special gift you can give yourself. And it's just thoughts of the day on that. And any of you that meditate, just really appreciate those moments and do process your life. Do process. Do the work. Absolutely, do the work. The rewards are tremendous. On today's show, we have a guest, Megan Timothy. She is an author and with an unusual road to recovery of long-distance cycling. Her books, Let Me Die Laughing and 12,000 Miles for Hope's Sake, describe her subsequent recovery from a stroke, or more specifically, a bleed to her brain. Not content with simply recovering from a massive brain injury and writing and publishing her book about that experience, Megan got on her trusty bike, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. She will correct me when she gets on. By Kokolu, and rode 12,000 miles around America. And so at a stroke, she had a stroke at age 60 and 2003. So what did her life look like before her stroke? She's going to talk to us. You can call in also to visit with Megan and myself. Call in at 1-347-857-3755. Now, this is a long-distance call, so you may want to use your free cell minutes. If you have a question for me or for Megan, you can call. You can also type it in on the online chat forum. I will try and work that as well while working the calls on the switchboard. Welcome to Counting the Days. I really appreciate your being here. Now let's talk to Megan. Good morning, Megan.
How are you doing?
Hi.
Hello.
Yes, hi, Megan. Good morning. Or actually, where you are, I guess, as well, it's probably still morning there, right?
It's still morning, yes. Same as you.
Good. It's a really wonderful morning out here. We've got bright sun. It's lovely, and I think we're going to get a few warmer days before winter hits.
Good.
That's always So I've introduced your two books and want to talk to you about you had your stroke, and you've referred to it as a stroke at age 60, and that was in 2003?
Yes. It was, I had no idea what a stroke was at that time. I hadn't paid much attention to strokes until I had one, and I certainly hadn't planned on having one, but I did, so... it was all a bit of a shock. wake up morning and find I couldn't read, write, or speak. So
that was a surprise day, huh?
It was a surprise day.
It's like you don't wish them. You don't wish them.
You don't wish them, but. And you have no, I had no idea this was coming on. I had nothing. I mean, I didn't have a headache of any kind. I didn't feel bad. It just happened. That's a startling thing about it. You know, you had no idea that it was on its way. It just arrived.
Oh my God. Because that was one of the questions I had, is like, did you have a headache? Or, I mean, one would assume that there would be some sort of symptom to cause that, to alert you, but none.
None at all. And my stroke arrived in the dead of night, and with the silence and swiftness of a sniper. I mean, I had no idea. I felt no pain. There was no nothing wrong. I got up and everything worked in my body, my legs, my arms, everything. So there was no indication. And all I had no pain in my head at that time. I just felt I had a kind of mild hangover, which was very strange since I don't drink. So I was just really confused about what was happening. If even after the stroke, if you know, I couldn't move a hand or arm or something, I would have looked for help right away. But mm-hmm. I had no idea there was anything wrong with me, so I just thought I you know, it was a hot day. Maybe I didn't drink enough water that day, or I'd eaten something that wasn't agreeing with me. That's how it felt, as mild as that. So I just went back to sleep again, and it was almost a whole day before someone called and I answered the phone and I realized I couldn't speak, and that's when I went to the hospital. And to miss a whole day after you've had a stroke without help is not a good thing to do. But, you know, that's how it happened to me, because I live alone. I didn't have the reason to speak to anyone during that day, and I just kind of stayed in bed, which is unusual, but I just wasn't feeling well. But it was so mild and with nothing really unusual. So I found no reason to inquire, you know.
Yeah. And so how many days was it before you really sort of knew and sought help, medical care?
Well, my stroke arrived sometime during the night. I know I went to bed after 12 because I was working on some papers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it happened there. And then I got a phone call early in the morning, but I was too groggy to answer it, so I didn't answer. And then someone called me the next evening about 7 or 8, and I answered the phone. And I was astonished to hear myself. It sounded as if I was imitating a yappy dog, you know, raw, 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 raw. And I tried to speak again, and again I heard myself raw, 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 raw. And then I began to figure, you know, when I kept these strange noises kept coming out of my mouth, I began to say, hey, there might be something a little more serious than a hangover.
Yeah.
And luckily it was a friend who had called, who had experience in her family, someone had a stroke, and she immediately suspected I might have had a stroke and called 911.
Oh, my God.
And the next thing I knew, I was being loaded onto an ambulance, and I had no idea why, and I passed out again, and then the next thing I knew, I was hurtling helter-skelter down a hospital hallway on a gurney. It was a fun ride, but very confusing. I had no idea why I was there or what I was doing on this gurney.
My God, that is amazing.
Yeah, and the strangest thing of that, I seemed to be watching myself from the ceiling above, watching the whole event. All these people running around me, shouting, whoa, 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 not speaking. speaking properly. I wondered what was wrong with them. You know, I still wasn't sure it was something was wrong with me. There's something wrong with the rest of the world.
Oh, my
God. And then I saw my body on the gurney, and I wondered why I was floating up in the air above and leaving my body down on the gurney below. It was very confusing.
Oh my God. more like a heroin trip than a stroke. I have any clue on how that is, but it sounds very very, very strange. It just sounds like a hallucinatory kind of thing, almost a clairvoyant.
Yeah, and really it was rather fun. You know, the first part of a stroke with all that stuff floating around like you were a hot air balloon, and that was kind of fun, but later when reality caught up with me and demanded that I do something about this brain of mine that had been shattered, that was the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then you discover that you really can't speak and you really can't read and you can't write and you can't communicate with the outside world, and that you've been trapped in the solitary confinement of your own mind, and that makes you stop and think a bit.
That's pretty horrific. So you could hear what was going on around you, but you couldn't communicate.
Yeah, I could understand everything too, and things people were saying to me, and they said, friend was with me in hospital, and they kind of shouted you because people can't understand that you're not deaf, you just can't communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So to try to communicate, they always shout louder, which is the absolute worst thing you can do to someone with a brain injury, because your brain is so traumatized and so sensitive that it just about blows out the little bits that you have left in there. You know, people can just remember to be quiet, turn the lights down, whisper to you, be gentle, you know, instead of this panicky thing of charging up and down and shouting and yelling in your ear and everything. Anyway, I did hear they were saying they will speak like this, like you are a kid, you know. And they'd say, well, you know, you've had a kind of a stroke, and I had no idea what they were talking about. You know, and a stroke, me, I'm as healthy as a horse, I'm athletic, I've always taken care of my body, and you know, stroke is what happens to old people, and that's certainly not. Then I said, well, you are 60 now, you know, you're getting up.
Still, you know, 60 is what the new 40 is, that what it is, you know?
Yeah.
So very, very, that's just amazing that, so you were sort of just trapped in your body.
Trapped in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know how to get, and then I thought, well, I've had a lot of accidents in my life because I was a professional horsewoman. I raced horses. I jumped horses. I did 3-day eventing. I climbed mountains all over the world and gone down rivers and stuck in the Amazon and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I've had problems. So when I kind of came to and I said, well, I've had some kind of accident. What is it? So I felt my body first, and my feet worked, and my legs, and my arm, everything worked, and I could stand up, and, you know, I had control of my body. Well, that's okay. And I said, oh, no, it's got to be a head accident. You know, what do we do here? And then the first thing that comes into mind is, how do I fix it?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And I did not know how to fix this. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that seems like that would be, especially for your personality, that would be where you would go with it. Like, how do I solve this problem? Because of your lifestyle. Yeah. Very courageous person and wanting to, you know, find out what the next step was. When did you find out the next step of, I guess, some sort of rehabilitation?
Well, I had no rehab. This was the problem. Everything happened in that year of 2003. My life was just hurtling by, and first there was a big financial crisis because a big financial thing had started at that time. My mother, whom I'd taken care of for over 20 years, died, and my house burnt down, and then, you know, a week or so later, I had this stroke. So everything came... Everything was kind of piled into one. So, yeah, I kind of sat back and I could handle everything else, but the stroke, I thought, well, I can handle that because I've always, you know, gotten through life okay. But, and the most frightening thing for me was, one, I could not help myself. I needed someone else's help. And this was very difficult for me. To get that straight in my head. You know, I had to ask for help. But I didn't know how to ask for help because all I could say was chicken. That was the only word that I was left with after this event, you know. And you don't, you learn very fast that the only thing you can do with the word chicken is order dinner. And that did a lot of help for me, who, because I'm a vegetarian, so, you know, I didn't pull win out on that at all.
That's a curious one, isn't it? The chicken word.
The chicken word. And I've met one other brain injured person who had chicken, and I met another one who had turkey, and then but that's the only bird words I've heard for all the people I've spoken to.
You need to have the chicken. Another birthday.
Yeah, there's two chickens and one turkey out there.
There's a lot more turkeys in one. So this shocks me a little bit about the not having rehab, and the reason I say that is because 2003, I mean, my injury was so long ago that they didn't even know what the word brain injury was, and but I'm shocked about 2003, why you weren't just put right into an entire rehab program to help you through this.
Well, the main thing was I was considered indigent at the time. All those crises had happened, and the last couple of years I spent a lot of money helping my mom through, and I didn't, you know, money doesn't really mean that much to me. If I've got enough to keep a roof over my head, that's fine. And so I spent all my money on that, and I thought, well, you know, because I knew she wasn't going to last long, and I wanted to spend that time with her. And I thought, well, after she's gone, if I don't have money, that's fine. I'll go get another job. I'll, you know, I can survive. But I didn't have time to get another job. I had a stroke.
You just
so I arrive in this hospital. I'm indigent, and I'm 60. And all they could think of would be good for a 60-year-old woman was to warehouse her and, well, watch the TV and eat potato chips. And, you know, it'll be a great life. Well, not for me, it isn't. So this was very, very difficult. I was under the state, which was very kind, you know, had paid for my hospital and had put me into this place, which was supposed to be a rehab place, but it was more a place for people, kind of crazy people, which was, it was very difficult, and there was no therapy there.
Okay.
So, I had to survive.
Mm-hmm. And that's just amazing. And then at what point did you decide, I guess may or may not be the right word, but to write the book, your first book? And your first
During my stay at this thing I called the place,
okay.
This crazy place, I saw a lot going on that shouldn't be done. You know, at first I thought I'm somewhere in third world seeing the things that were going on. I mean, I couldn't believe that this was America. And I thought, I've got to get this down. Well, how are you going to get it down? You can't read. You can't write. You can't speak. Well, you can't let these things hold you back. So I knew I can think and I can understand. So while I was learning my alphabet and all those things that I had to learn right from scratch, I wrote every day in my head because I could think. And every day I would reread the stuff written in, I had written in my head.
Yeah.
And I had to do that for a year. And then after a year, I just started to make simple words again. I'd learn the alphabet enough to start making simple words, and I'd put the word things down one by one. It was a laborious task. But, you know, you can't, like this place that I was in was terrible. It was really awful. But, you know, you can sit there and say, yeah, this is just really bad, and I'm in a bad way, and you can't waste your time doing that. When I woke up in this place and saw what was going on, I mean, there were people dying everywhere and screaming and shouting and banging. It was horrible. You got to say, you know, I got to survive. How am I going to survive this?
Mm-hmm.
And this was my therapy at the time because I wasn't having any proper therapy.
Mm-hmm.
My mind was working to survive day by day, to work around these things that were happening or that weren't happening. And I really think that really, really helped me because, boy, I was living with a really slow mind, and to think things out took a long time, but that's what I do all day. My writing my book in my head and then watching everything and figuring out how to survive.
Mm-hmm.
That was my therapy.
Oh, amazing. Well, you certainly were using your brain and giving it work to do. And that
it was a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think that hard work you put your brain through, I have kind of two questions. Do you feel that significantly was your recovery? It was your own sort of self-made rehabilitation?
It helped me in the beginning. Although whatever I had done at that point, and I'll give you a couple of examples if you want about survival there, but it, you can work as hard. I worked so hard, and I wanted to write this book so badly, but I don't think, or I might have, but it would have taken years and years to relearn to read, write, and speak without help from a therapist. You
mm-hmm.
really need help from a therapist or from somebody, because there was nothing in my brain to redo that
mm-hmm.
part.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed just empty.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very scary when I thought, I cannot help myself. I don't like to use the word cannot, because you can do anything. But I really was on the edge thinking, I don't think I can do this myself. I have to have assistance. I have to have guidance. I have to be put in the right direction at least, so I know which direction to keep going. I did not know which direction to start with. That's
mm-hmm.
the thing. I had no starting point. And luckily, the state eventually did think I might need a therapist. But they'd only give it to me for like a couple of weeks at a time. And then they'd check to see if I'd, you know, if I still needed it, which was ridiculous because you can't learn that very much in that short time, especially when you've just come out of a stroke. Your brain is so traumatized that I got a book, an alphabet book, kids book, that I was trying to teach myself. My friends were trying to help me through. But I could only try to read and learn this for about 5 minutes at a time. Then I would pass out from exhaustion.
Yes.
Your brain said, so
very
it took
passionate.
Me a whole year to learn the alphabet, just because the time that you can put into it is so limited,
mm-hmm.
because you just get so exhausted. And it's hard, but it can be done. Don't let anybody tell you it can't be done, but don't think it's going to be an easy way.
Right.
I'm sorry, keep on.
That's okay. As you're saying, you know, it's like even when it's all, the deck is stacked against you, you have to
yeah.
keep, Is it sort of a belief system that you create around your injury that you can do it and that you are going to survive?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, and I get a little, like after, I could, after a year I had brain surgery, I had to wait for a year to see if my brain was, you know, could take another torment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had the brain surgery, which was very difficult, and the doctor thought it might take 18 hours, and it was very risky, but
mm-hmm.
it seemed to be the best thing. So I did that, and after I did that, almost a year after that, which was 2 years after my stroke, even my friends were getting exhausted. I mean, they were wonderful, but you wear out your friends, and you've got to be very careful not to do that. And even my friends, I had written this one, I just almost completed my first book, and they were excited, and they said, well, you know, you've done so much. People said you'd never read, write, or speak again, and you've written the book. You're starting to speak okay and read, you know, and that.
Yeah.
And this is about as far as you're going to get.
Yeah.
No, it's not. But I did not know where to go to proceed. I still couldn't call on the phone. I couldn't use a telephone because my numbers are a big problem with numbers. I couldn't use the computer. I couldn't really ask questions because I didn't have words, but I knew there were answers out there. I mean, America is America. There's so many things going on, and the
mm-hmm.
information is out there. And the only thing I had at that time was a bicycle. So I thought, I'm going to go find the answers, some answers. I'm going to find this information. So I got on my bike, you know, and rode 12,000 miles around the States for 8 months looking for answers. And when I told my friends I was going to do this, they thought I'd totally lost my mind. And they said, you know, you're 63, you got one eye and half a brain and no money, you know, you're not going to get anywhere, you know, you're not going to make it. But I did make it. Eight months later, after riding through 27 states, I not only reclaimed my life, I found my way back home in one piece. But this doesn't make me superwoman. This just proves to everybody that belief in yourself can take you anywhere you want to go,
This is true.
All have the strength within us, and it's just up to us whether or not we use it.
Exactly. I agree. That I've said that many times myself as well. You know, I'm not some mm-hmm. superhuman being. It's just I did what anybody can do under the circumstances, and it's to recover, it's to survive, find something that drives you. For me, what drove me was not wanting to be dependent as I was, and that fear is what drove my recovery is not wanting to be dependent. Sounds like you have a piece of that too. I think that's probably a common thread.
Yes, it is very, and when you said that, that's perfect. There's no way I wanted to be dependent, and there was no way I could. I had no family. I was wearing out my friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I didn't get out to do it, I'm going to be in deep trouble. I'm going to be stuck in one of these places. And if that is your choice, if you do like sitting and watching TV all day and eating potato chips, and you're happy to do that, it's your choice.
Exactly.
No, you can't force anyone to do anything, but it was not my choice. And I was not going to have anybody tell me that's what I was going to do. You know?
Exactly. And, you know, I wanted to, we've got about 10 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we, you know, that you have time to also talk about your books and kind of where people can order your books and give us an idea of how we can get your story.
Okay. My books can be, I think the easiest thing for anyone is to get onto my website. That is megantimothy.com. And there are links on that that will bring you to the publisher where you can order the books. That would be the simplest, I think.
Okay, so that's
megantimothy.com.
MeganTimothy.com. And
yeah.
I wanted to ask you, too, if you do become discouraged. I mean, you did become discouraged. Do you find that you have waves of discouragement that you sort of have to, you know, get back up on the horse again? It's not a one quick fix.
It's not a quick fix, but I very early discouragement, rage, all those things I decided have no place with me right now. I'll do all that later because that's a waste of time for me, and I could not afford it because there's so much you have to relearn and redo that I couldn't afford being angry or frustrated or anything like that. Yeah, you get quick waves, but they'd never last for more than minutes or half an hour with me because I just realized that's a half an hour. You could have learned another letter or another word or something. And then my recovery became really interesting for me because I don't know too much about the brain and how it works. And I was just astonished to find these strange things that happened, like reading, writing, and speaking sound so tied together. I thought they were all kind of in one little lump in your brain and little window in your brain, and that's the window that was broken, so I just have to fix this window, and then they will all be working. Oh. It has not been so in my case. My speech started to come back, and even after 7 years, I still lose words when I'm tired or excited or, you know. Reading has been very slow to recover. I still read like a child, which makes my writing now very difficult because the words and the ideas come out of my head. But after I've written a page I've just written used to take me over an hour to read. And now it takes about half an hour because you have to edit and you have to do some editing and stuff. So this is the difficulty. But, you know, you can't let these things stop you. And don't let anybody think that, you know, they might have heard me say that it's 7 years since my stroke. Well, you'll never read any faster or any. Yeah. They've told me that, but it's not true. Well, in my case, I know it's not. I'm still improving. The improvement and recovery that I continue to have is slow, but it's still coming. I can still find improvements.
Yes.
You know, so you can't give up. You can't give up to the old-fashioned way, which I think they said about 30, 35 years ago, that if you read after so many months or so many years, there's no hope for any improvement. That's just such rubbish. Get infuriated when I hear it told to people who, at my point, there's still some insecurity and everything, and the least thing, the worst thing you have is someone to tell you that, especially someone with authority like a medical person whom we look to for answers, you know.
And however, if I might add here that the medical profession sometimes, I mean, they're very problem-oriented. And what happens is that's what you get, what your problems are and what your limitations are. And there isn't the presentation of the potential or the possibilities or any of those things, because that's just not how, you know, Western medicine works. I think it's changing. I hope that's true, that doctors can be more sympathetic and also more realistic as to the potential of someone with a brain injury. what you can accomplish. You just will it.
Yes, and there are some places I've been on my kind of book tour around the country now for about 4 or 5 months, and I have come to some places that I've really got that together. One place I passed through on my bike ride, when was it, in 2004, I can't remember when I went on the bike ride, anyway about 3 or 4 years ago. It's in Nebraska. It's called QLI, Quality Living Inc. And they, when people, it is a wonderful rehab place. And when you go in there, they want, they bring, insist the whole family and you come in there and they talk stuff because you're not in this together. Everyone around you is involved. And they ask the person, what do you want to do with your life? Not what we think you can do. And if the person can't move their legs or something, they say, well, I want to ski again. And they say, okay, it's going to be difficult, and you're going to have to work at it. We will help. We will find a way to do this, to get this dream. Don't lose your dream, but it probably be a different way to how you skied before, but there is a way to do it.
Right, manifest those dreams. Yeah.
Manifest those dreams, and it's this is a marvelous place that really goes after the dreams, because once you lose your dreams, means you lose hope, and when you lose hope, it's going to be very difficult to get back.
You've fallen down in that dark well, further and further and further, spiraling. Mm-hmm. You know, well, we've only got a couple of minutes left with Megan Timothy. And she is the author of 2 books, Let Me Die Laughing and 12,000 Miles for Hope's Sake. And, Megan, it's just been such a pleasure to have you on. I just think your story is amazing. I'm so happy that you were willing to come on and tell us all about your recovery. And we'll all look forward to hearing much more about you. And is there a third book in the works, or
in the works? Yes.
Good. And maybe another cycling trip.
No, I thought I'd written everything I knew about recovering from brain injury, but this last year other things have come up again. How your brain continues to recycle itself. And I've been talking to some scientists, brain scientists, about it, and they're just kind of working on this issue. It's too long and involved to kind of explain to you, but
yeah.
I thought it was my imagination. But when I spoke to them, they say, yeah, this really happened, so I'm kind of writing on that. But
right.
I really thank you for having me, and I just want to encourage everybody that they are not here to endure life. You're here to enjoy it. So go out and have fun, and you've got no excuse not to have fun.
Absolutely. That is so true. We are here to enjoy it. The universe is loving and kind. Just ask.
Mm-hmm. That's
Meg. Yes, thank you very much. You have a fabulous day, and I hope to see you again or have you on the show again. So we will connect, I hope, again in the future.
Super.
All right. Thank you, Megan.
Okay, bye.
Okay, so thank you so much, Megan, for sharing your story, and what a story. I want to thank you for joining me on today's show. I will be here live each Sunday morning at 9 a.m., and that's Pacific Standard Time. Always remind yourself who you are, how much you've accomplished, and where you want to be next. Survivors know how to reframe their picture. Many people today, without an injury, are having to learn to remanufacture themselves with job, family, or home loss. Each day, faithfully check in with yourself, where you are in the present, then hold it up against your dream to ask if this is the path. And if the answer is no, then you know what to do. Reframe your direction, regroup, and get back on the horse. Thank you for listening.